Hey, Betty, welcome back to another episode of Rethink, where we are just having questions or conversations with men, leaders in different areas of life. Today, I want to introduce you to a relatively new friend of mine, Adam Weber, who's a pastor in the huge, like, urban state of South Dakota.
South Dakota.
The state that never closed.
It's the only state that never shut down at any point. So
never, There's like 47 of you up there, right? It's like a huge...
There's a few. Most of us are related. And yeah. So it works out well if you want to go hunting because everybody's someone's family member's land. And so you just do that.
We'll come back to that, I promise. All right? Yeah. I met Adam at a retreat called Young Guns, right? And that is a retreat put on by a leader called Brad Lominick, who's speaking at my retreat coming up. But he just has this passion to see up and coming leaders network together and also share best practices. But more than anything, just it's really lonely out there in leadership world. Now you're a pastor, I'm a pastor, but I think that would apply to anybody who's at the top of the, I don't want to call it a food chain, but an org chart or something like that. Feels very, very glamorous, but it can be a really lonely place. And so people like Brad have given you the benefit of a lot of things that we were talking before this started rolling that we didn't have. We were out there on our own. When you got together with other pastors or other leaders, it was more of a competition thing. I didn't feel that in the culture of a lot of leadership circles today. So, let's get into your story a little bit. Tell us about who you are, what you do, what's going on in your life right now. And then I've got some more pointed questions about some different seasons that all of us as leaders go through. So, Adam, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, Jim, it's a huge honor, first off, to be on your podcast. And I need to mention what you mentioned about Brad and that circle. I'm a person who's always struggled in peeing contests, basically. Like when a bunch of pastors get together or business leaders or coaches, all of a sudden you're starting to see who's the best and numbers-wise and all that kind of thing. And something that was game-changing for me the very first time I went on a trip with Brad, he's from the first moment that whatever started, like kind of the first session, he just said, "Hey, I don't care how big your church is, how many books you've written, how many songs you've written, how many whatever. And if that's why you're here, you won't be invited back," I think is what he said. But he's like, "If you want to be honest," he's like, "all of you guys are leaders. That's why you're here. You wouldn't just, but if you want to get honest, if you want to get real about what you're struggling with, what you're fighting, like, gosh, this is the right place." Mm-hmm. And I can remember just clearing the room, like in the coolest way. Everybody's like, "Okay, so I don't have to impress you anymore." No, I want you here. And I think, gosh, for me, that role model that I've seen in Brad has been game changing even for me in my leadership. So I need to say that. But for me, my story, I'm born and raised a South Dakota kid. If you're from South Dakota and you're not born and raised here, I'm sorry. I'm not sure what if God's upset with you or what.
Oh, wow. So
it's a great place. I actually love South Dakota, with the exception of the flesh eating cold weather in January and February. But born and raised South Dakota kid, grew up in the church, Lutheran, my extended family's Catholic, wanted nothing to do with God since early as I can remember. Like, my earliest memories of life, not just church stuff, is me not wanting anything to do with it. I got confirmed in high school. I told my parents it was the most I'd ever lied and to so many people at one time, because you had to stand up with your other classmates and said you believed in Jesus, and I didn't believe in Jesus. So my parents
where did that come from? Like, it sounds like it was almost an animosity, almost like I am not going to believe this stuff. What was that kind of rooted in?
I don't see myself as a cynic, because I'm not that. I'm quick to see the good, but I am a skeptic in some ways. And so I can remember early on, we'd hear about an amazing God while everyone was falling asleep, and we'd sing about an amazing God, but no one would mention that amazing God outside this hour on a Sunday morning. And in second and third grade, I'm talking like really young, I'm thinking to myself, when something amazing is in my life, whether it's a football game, a cute girl, an old car — I love old cars — like, those amazing things, they impact me. You know, when I'm around an amazing cute girl, I can't talk straight because she's so amazing. And I used to just think, if there's a God,
yeah,
and that God is amazing, he'd change everything.
Mm.
And so just from my place, again, I'm a young kid looking around. It's just like, man, I don't tell me about an amazing God and then this, you know? And so for me, that was my like, yeah, I'm not into this. And I just, the older I got, the more that feeling grew inside me, you know, okay. And it just grew and grew and grew. And like, I was just like, hey, Christian, maybe go read a science book, you know, like, hey, Christian, maybe what other fairy tales do you believe in? I just didn't felt like I saw anything real, like, and you know, and so it was later on, the pastor who led me to Christ, he just retired a couple years ago, still very, very close to him. Each week he got up and he just began to speak to the heart. It was no longer gibberish that flew over my head. And he just got up and was real, and he just shared. And I can remember telling you go.
Well, you walked away, but you put yourself back into a place where that pastor started washing you in the word, just say, to kind of use biblical language there.
It's yeah. Like,
so what changed from the, I'm done, I'm confirmed, I'm tapping out. What's your life plan that ends up now you're getting led back to Christ and now you're a pastor? Like, so what happened in there?
I was still in the same house as my mom and my dad. So that's the long story short. So we were going to church, whether I faked illness and death like I did every single Sunday morning or not. So like, I always said, if I actually had something wrong or terminal on a Sunday morning, I would have been dead. And my parents would have been like guilty of some law. Like, you didn't bring your kid to the hospital and he's telling you he was dying. He said that every single Sunday morning his entire life. So we just thought he was joking again. Yeah. So I knew I was going to church. And so we went to this different church. I look back, my parents set aside all their personal preferences and everything they'd ever known to check out this different church. And I've thanked them so many times, because they did have a walk with Jesus. They set all that aside because they were so concerned about me.
Mm.
Wow. You know, they're like, we're good. Like, we have that foundation, but our son's not. And so we need to do everything. Like, and I look back and I'm like, I only wish most churches had that heartbeat of like, we're good. Like, I want to keep growing, but I'm an adult Christian. I can feed myself, but my brother here, my wife here, my son here, they're not. And so, dude, preach, talk to this guy. Like, we'll get it, you know? And so that's what it was for me. And I got there and I knew I was going to church. The church was filled with cute girls my same age. And so I knew I had to go to church, and so I might as well enjoy the views. And so I told my parents,
yay, like, God, well done.
Like, I'm in, God. No, but it was just this journey for me that changed. And then I went to college for business and marketing. I always thought I'd be a CEO of a company and just do things that didn't make sense financially and whatever as a business. And then the summer before my senior year of college, through the craziest circumstances, filled in for a pastor. Within the first week, I knew I was supposed to be a pastor. I've always not liked kind of fluff conversations. Like, I really want to hear how you're doing. And there was three ladies in the church that were my mom's age that had terminal cancer. And so that first week I went and visited each of them for the first time to pray with them.
Yeah.
And I was just like, first off, I don't know why you, as a however old they were, want to meet with a 21-year-old fill-in pastor who has no idea what he's doing. But it was just such an honor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't believe I get to be a part, like, to talk with you and pray with you. And so I was in. So went to seminary, had no desire to start a church. When I was 24 years old, that same pastor led me to Christ, and this opportunity to film this for this pastor had this idea of starting a church. And against my will, I basically didn't have the courage to tell him no. Started a church called Embrace. And so that's been 15 coming up on 16 years ago, and still don't have anything figured out. I'm a work in progress in every way, but married and four kids, and life is really, really good right now. So after a really hard, crappy season not that long ago, life is really, really good.
Yeah. And Embrace is doing great.
Really well. Yeah. It's been fun.
As I follow you up there, and seems like Embrace and Flatirons have very similar passions. You know, talk to my friend, talk to my son, talk to my dad, talk to my, you know, we have a real heart for men around here. And again, not into fluffy conversations, into like, hey, I need help in real life today, right? Yep. So, like, I'm in a hermeneutics class right now, and which is a biblical interpretation class. And so much of it is just like, I don't care. And then you'll find this one nugget and you go like, I could preach for a month on that. Right. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, so those are what I'm trying to like what you just said is like, it's such an honor to partner up with people in the rawest, most intimate details of their life. And they'll go like, can you tell me if God cares about this or sees it or could help with this? And then that's a huge responsibility too, that you feel when you teach is, but here's my understanding of what God says. And then they believe you. Like when you open your mouth on the weekend and say, this is what the Lord says, they go like, oh, okay. So we better be right. You know, we better be right. And I just love what I'm embrace up there.
What a duty and a privilege, mm-hmm. you know, like what an honor to have that ability to do that is crazy awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's heavy, you know, and like sometimes if we carry it the wrong way, they put you on sabbatical, you know, which is my story, but we're not talking about my story. But you did just mention that you're in a really good season, but you just came through a rough one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah. So, 2018, went through kind of the first horrible leadership season church-wise here. Had to make a really hard decision that was not popular at all.
Yeah.
Whole bunch of staff left, whole bunch of people left. It was horrible. And I, for the first time in my life, didn't want to love anybody. I mean, I didn't think a person could hurt and have pain like that. My father is my hero. There's been several times that we've almost lost him because of his health not being in a great situation. This is harder than all of that combined.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, because I'll miss my dad when something happens to him, but there won't be 17 other horrible feelings mixed in with it. I mean, it was brutal. I would tell my close friends, I want to start a new church, and my wife and kids and a few close friends are welcome, and everybody else can't come. Like, mm-hmm. it's just going to be a really small. I just made a hard decision, and it wasn't popular. And I'll be honest, I'm a recovering people pleaser, you know, mm-hmm. like for most of my life, I'll do anything to make a person like me, to win somebody over, to whatever. And for the first time in my life, I had people who thought horrible thoughts about me and I didn't know what to do. And through it, thought I was having, if I don't know what a nervous breakdown looks like, but I think I had a nervous break. I mean, I was so broken and hurt, and daily would ask my two closest friends if I could leave. I felt like a coward for staying. It was horrible. And now again, same church. It's the best season I've ever been in. I feel like I can't tell enough people about that because I thought it was over. I thought best days far behind me. No, we have a God who, he brings dead things back to life.
Right.
And so I feel like I'm standing in the fruit season of that, in ways I can't explain. Years ago, I preached on, I am the vine, you are the branches, bear more fruit, all that kind of thing. And I called a vineyard in Brookings, South Dakota, which is hilarious that Brookings, South Dakota has a vineyard, by the way. But I called this guy, didn't tell him what I was doing. So he didn't know I was a pastor. I just said, like, tell me about pruning. And he said, at one point, you know, I'm like, do you like just clip like the end of the thing? And he's like, no, to the untrained eye, when I'm pruning a vine, it looks like I'm killing the vine. And so that preached really, really good, you know, 10 years ago. I can remember thinking in this season, mm-hmm. God, I feel like you're killing me.
Yeah, I know.
Right now. Like, yeah. I feel like you're not just kind of lightly pruning and this is kind of fun and hurts a little bit. Like, I feel like you're killing, I'm being killed right now. Yeah.
I do.
But now, again, on the flip side of that whole more fruit thing, whether it's influence, joy, peace in my life, the team that I have, I'm standing in the more fruit.
Okay. So I love that. You know, I relate to so much of it because you know a little bit of my story too.
Yeah.
So we always jump to resurrection, which is great. That's the fun part, right? Yeah, and the joy, right? But I mean, Easter's awesome. Friday sucks, okay? And Thursday night is overwhelming to the point of death, okay? To quote a famous person, right? Let's go back there, okay? So you don't have to say what the call was or what, but did you make the right call? And knowing what it cost you, would you make the same call again? And when it all went to crap, did you question your call? Do you follow that?
That's great. So looking back, I would not change anything about the actual decision. I had to ask a very beloved staff person to step off.
Okay.
I learned so much. This is the stuff that sucks to learn about yourself. Mm-hmm. I've never been an angry boss, an angry person at all, like yelling, blah, blah, blah. But I have been very driven. And so a lot of times we put a goal over people. Mm-hmm. That's something I had to learn. I've never been ever been like this angry person, but I have been an uncaring person in the sense of like, hey Jim, how's your weekend? Like, how are things going? Instead of, hey Jim, did we get that done? Just like caring, like shepherding the team. Like, and so I think it was accumulation of that. Another thing that I have to learn, I've never been a vision person, like leadership wise. My vision's always just been Jesus. Okay. And so I'm like, well, Jesus, no, what's your vision? Like, what makes Embrace different? I don't know. Like several times in our churches, I don't know. Well, actually, no, you have a heart to reach people that no one else wants to reach.
There you go.
Like, I mean, there actually is a specific call that God has placed in your heart. And so I have always struggled throughout the history of Embrace to actually be clear with who we are. And so when you're not clear with who you are, other people will try to say who you are.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of the situation. That's a leadership fail on my part. Mm. You know, I can't point fingers. I wanted to at first. I wanted to point a lot of fingers.
Sure.
But no, in hindsight, that was a mistake. That's my sole job. Like no one else. Everybody carries vision, but like I am the visionary. Like,
yes.
And so yeah. There was part of that. In it, I don't know if I like regretted the decision.
What was at stake that made you do this? If you make this call, this could happen. If I don't make this call, this could happen. What was at stake that said I got to make the call?
What was at stake was the heart of Embrace. Like why this church, like God uniquely decided this church was needed in Sioux Falls.
Okay.
And honestly, I think what was at stake was I would no longer be the lead pastor. Like I think that was even at stake. And so, which is really even embarrassing to say, but that, I think that was even at stake of like, one of us, this isn't working. So one of us has to go. And I actually thought during that time, maybe this is a sign that it's my time's done. Hmm. And, I had several churches reaching out during the same time period, which makes it suck even more.
Yeah, like, it does.
Hey, would you be interested in being a teaching pastor at our church? Well, my current church is a trash can on fire. So is that a good resume builder? Like,
I'll take a janitor job right now. Yes, get me out of here. Right?
So, and at that time, so that was before the decision. I was coming to Beck like, hey, so-and-so called, they're interested. Like, what do you think about that? And she's like, I just don't feel like that's what we're supposed to do. And I mean, my wife has got a really good, north inside of her. Like, and so I'm like, okay, I'm going to listen to that. And
okay. So let's go back to, you know, I want to say two things for what you just said. One is, and this is a leadership lesson that no leader wants to look in the mirror and go, well, this is true. Is a few weeks ago, I'm sitting back here in my office talking to Jesse, going back to the events that led up to my sabbatical. And I said, what did I do? That was like what button did I push? What was the, what horrible thing did I do that they put their finger on? Cause nobody ever articulated it to me. It was just the culture was bad. It was just toxic from top to bottom. And I said, I want him to give me an event. And he said, Jim, it all happened on your watch. I just went, ah. And that's leadership, right?
Yes.
That That's leadership. It happened on your watch. Not all my fault, all my responsibility. All right. And so that's when you got to have to, you know, cojones up and go like, I got to make a really hard call. But now let's go back to something else you said, Adam, because you said like you're getting offers to kind of split and run and get a fresh start, right? Maybe recast your vision, get something going.
Yeah.
But you stayed. But to me, you use the word, I almost felt like a coward staying. It seemed like that took a lot of courage to go in there and fight for this vision of a church going after the hearts of people that most churches don't care about, right? You could have cut and run, and there's 100 churches out there that would have said, we'll hire you to do that over here. And you said, I'm staying. And Beck said, I think we're supposed to stay and fight for this, okay? So Why do you call that, I felt like a coward staying?
I'm sharing more than I think I've shared anywhere.
I've had a lot of counseling the last 3 years. So I'm really good at.
When you have people leaving saying horrible things about you.
Yes.
And in a place of leadership, one of the hardest things is a lot of times you need to stand with your arms behind your back as people are punching you.
Yeah.
I felt like such a coward, like as far as like, I felt really embarrassed. I felt really just foolish. And, you know, like, I mean, the heartbeat of Embrace was questioned for the first time ever. My relationship with Jesus was what was questioned. It was horrible. And I think the thing I struggled with early on was, should I have taken that parachute out? Because I could have taken that parachute out and our church would have been like, oh my gosh, we love Adam. It was before everything hit the fan.
Yeah.
And so that was something I wrestled with, but I really felt like a coward. I can remember telling my best friends that, like, I just feel like a coward for staying. And now it's so weird. I feel weird even saying this. It's been enough people. Now the team, so about half the team stayed, half the team didn't. Mm-hmm. The team that stayed, I feel like they have saw the journey, the road I took, and it has earned so much street cred. I mean, my team is now the protective people. Like, they're like my bodyguard, even though I don't want or ask for that. Like, they're like blocking for me of like, Adam, that's garbage. Like, no, that's like good. That's not true. Like, and so it's pretty amazing to be at that place when my greatest embarrassment was with my team. I mean, that's where I felt most embarrassed is like, guys, I feel like I failed everybody. And
yeah,
the self-awareness piece, I want to mention that. I listened to, actually, Lominick had an Enneagram guy on his podcast. I think it's this week's episode. So I listened to that. The number one key to successful business, leadership, ministry, whatever, was a self-aware leader. He's like in like surveying all these people, the self-aware leader. And again, before that, I'm a high people pleaser. I'm like, I wanted the event too. I'm like, what? Am I really like, what? Like, can you tell me, like, give me exact, like, I don't know. It's just kind of everything, Adam. Like, it's just kind of built up.
Yeah.
Like, but give me an event. No, I can't, because there's like 600. Like,
but if they would have given me an event, I would have said, well, that's because of this event and this event and this event that they did. So that event's not even my fault, you know? So,
and so it was like, for me, there is no like horrible event. It's just little by little. Hey, Adam, we should have paused there. And you said, let's lean in there. And you and that. And you never said anything, but I knew what you wanted was, you know, because like, I just know you. And so I know what you wanted, even though you didn't say anything. Like, and so it's all of that. And so I feel like one of the greatest things that's happened from that is that self-awareness. And even now, like after a meeting, I'll come and I got truth tellers. I got an 8 Enneagram, very direct person, love him, who will just say like exactly. And so I know he's not pulling any punches and I need that.
Yeah.
You know, and then hey,
give us your definition of self-aware. Self-aware, a self-aware leader.
Having as best idea of what it's like to be on the other side of you.
That's good.
Like as much as you can have an understanding of what it's like to be on the other side of you. Like the things you say, because it's not always an event. Sometimes then it's an event. A pastor has an affair. Mm. A pastor steals money. Mm. Okay, well, that's very, I can get my arms around that. Like, yeah. Yep, shouldn't do that. But a lot of times it's these subtle things. It's these unspoken expectations that you have. It's do people walk on eggshells around you? Like, but I don't yell. No, but you make everyone anxious. Like, you know, like, but yeah. I don't scream. I don't say anybody, call anybody names. No, but I can't remember the last time you said my name and asked how I was doing, you know, yeah. Like just that, like as much awareness as what it's like to be on the other side of you. And, for me, it's really unique. I've mentioned my dad. My dad is my hero, the nicest, most liked person I've ever met. He's a quieter man, so he's not like out there broadcasting stuff. But if you meet him, you just love him. Well, he was an electrician before his health failed, and I worked a couple summers with him, and it was always funny because when we got to a job site and he was at your house wiring your house, you could tell he got a little flustered when a customer would start talking to him. Because internally he knew a couple things. First off, you're paying me a lot of money to have this conversation right now because I'm not a cheap electrician. Yeah. And secondly, I really just want to put your outlets in so I can get to the next house, you know? So yeah. The only time my dad wasn't really soft and kind, and he was always kind, but like you could just tell there was you could just feel it, was when he was wiring houses. Mm. For me, I feel like I have very few gifts. One of them is the gift of gab. If I cross paths with you, there's a high chance that, gosh, I really like Adam. Like, he was super friendly. And I'm that way with everybody in the past, with the exception of my staff. Mm. The okay. only place, a little bit, of, again, Jim Weber, like, he got to the workplace and he just kind of wanted to work.
Yeah,
that's how I am at the office.
Hmm. I'm just wondering, like, okay, so some of us, we lead organizations, but like, what does that mean for a self-aware husband or a self-aware dad? You know, like, what are my kids actually hearing from me? Like, or reading? What message are they getting from me? I don't mean for them to. Or when I get home, what am I aware of what I'm communicating to my wife? You know, because on the other hand, right, this is convicting stuff, man. I can be Pastor Jim. I can be Pastor Jim. See somebody in a restaurant, like, hey, man, what are you doing? Or see somebody at a game, or see somebody in the church hallway, and I'm like, oh. And they're like, he's just awesome. And then they look at Robin, is like, is he just awesome at home? And she's like, yeah, no, no, he's not. He doesn't talk. He just stares, you know. Or so this is. This podcast is. I think this is much better, bigger than. And you made reference with Brad, is like any leader is self-awareness and being a husband, being a dad, being a father, being a coach, being a teacher, being whatever. Everybody's trying to read you and everybody's trying to kind of please you too, you know?
Yes.
Right. Our whole staff, like I never understood this. It's like, if I poke my head in somebody's office and go like, hey, how you doing? It's good to see you. They ride on that. And I'm like, why? Right? But then I'll hear like, hey, somebody's really upset because you walked by the hall in the other day and you didn't say their name. I'm like, huh? I was probably thinking about a sermon about friendliness or something, you know, about self-awareness, something like that. It's like, man, I just wanted to take a time out from that, Adam, because I think that's really, it's like, I mean, that's convicting to me as a leader at Flatirons, but also as a leader at home, a leader with my kids, my grandkids, my, you know, my buddies, is like, that's good. We can teach it. We can preach it. But then we go to the job site and we just want to get stuff done. Right. That's so good, man.
Well, I think you said like, so how do we do that at home? I think, at least for me, my kids and my wife will often tell me, but so often I don't hear it.
Okay.
And like they'll tell, like, I think actually the people in our lives will try to tell you. And I think they tried to tell me about like, hey, Adam, gosh, our team's kind of tired. Like, we need to slow it. slow down a little bit. And for me, it's just like, well, just suck it up, you know, like that's my, I think this is going to be a really embarrassing example, but it's,
those are my favorites.
Oh my gosh. So, it's legitimately, like, not joking, something I've had to talk to a counselor about is I'm a neat freak, at home. So, why? Because it's something I can control, you know, like mm-hmm. Is just whatever. Well, this is a really humbling thing that I've started to hear. My daughter said, she just said this to me last night, actually. I walked by her room and without saying anything, she's like, "Dad, I'll clean it." And I'm like, I call her baby. I'm like, "Baby, hey, no, you know, I didn't even see your room. No, but I'll clean it." Those are the moments you want to take note, Dad. You know, like,
yeah,
it's like, what? My daughter thinks if I walk by her room and I see her, like, I don't even speak. I wasn't even thinking about it. You want to take note of that. I think for anybody listening, our kids, our wife, our best friend, our staff, Dad, I'll clean. Those moments, you got to like, I mean, like, God grabbed me by the shirt last night.
Yeah.
He's like, "Hey, hey, Dad, you hear that? Your sixth grade daughter, you just hear that? What she said, like, that, like, she shouldn't be feeling that about her own bedroom, like, let alone her house." I mean, it's those moments, like, you got to tune in. And so it's like, that's something, like, okay, like, how do you process that? Like, and how, more than process, how do you take action against that? And, you know, that's the smallest thing. And my daughter and I have an amazing relationship. We have so much fun together. But that's a part, like, that I want to work on, you know, like, seriously, I think, like, it's from the same daughter, like, "Hey, are you working tonight?" I'm like, "No." And she's like, "Awesome." You know, I'm like, oh, that's the thing to take note of too. Like, bingo. Like, oh my gosh. One of the five people in my life who are closest to me are bummed if I have to work because they want to just be with me. That's success. That's the success part. Yeah. But this other little thing, and maybe some other little things, and, you know, and it looks different for every one of us. You want to take note of that, Dad. Hey, husband, you better listen into that. Hey, like, friend, gosh, take note of that, you know? Yeah. And so I think there's part of me, and I said to her last night, hey, baby, like, I'm sorry, like, that you even feel like that, like, you know, like, and hey, you could tell, like, even just that's self-awareness. Like, instead of just walking on, I didn't say anything, keep going. Like, that self-awareness, like the pause, we're not perfect. Jesus is perfect, but he wants us to become more like him. And that's one of those moments where after you screw up, one of the most powerful things you can do is circle back around and say, "Hey, I'm sorry." My dad, I'll never forget it. Again, like, my hero to this day, most powerful things he ever said to me are the words when he'd say, "I'm sorry." It's like Superman says he's sorry.
Right.
You know, like, and so often as a kid, I can't even remember. I'm like, "Dad, I don't even remember what," you know, like, that's thankfully about kids. Like, they're like, the next day, everything's great. But, like, man, my hero said, "I'm sorry." Suck it up, Dad. Suck it up, husband. Go say you're sorry.
And then
there's don't say it. Like, work on it like you would on your business. Work on it as a dad, like you would on your ministry, on whatever else that you would do anything to refine customer service. Like, but what about how you walk past your daughter's bedroom?
Yeah. You know, you made a statement and I agree with it. And then I'm gonna push on it a little bit. One is you know, kids are resilient. And then they're like, "Oh, I don't even remember that." Stuff like that.
It's true.
Yes and no.
Yes and no. That's good.
Because I've worked with a lot of men, men's retreats, and little subtle things that we pick up from our moms and dads or pivotal times in our life become messages in our head that we kind of project onto God. And so I'm not saying if your daughter's sitting there going, you know, hopefully this never happens, but I know that a lot of the times in my life, I've always thought that, you know, I'm not good enough, and there's just somebody in the wings ready to take my place, okay? And so my response to God is, "God, I'll do better. I'll do better. I'll get numbers up. I'll get this up. I'll get campuses up. I'll get responses up. I'll get, my first thing is, God, I know I can do better than I'm doing, but you know, it's like God walked by my door and went, I'm going to get this right. You know? And a lot of the messages that we take on that we think, oh, it's just kids, I didn't mean anything by it. You're right. And they don't take it personally, but it goes in there and then it comes out going, is this how the whole world, and is if this world, is this how the whole God thing works? And he just says, my room's a mess. You know, I'm not judging you on what you said.
No, this is so good.
All of us.
And I fully agree too.
I mean, right. It's like, is God too busy for me? Cause he's running the universe, you know, or, and then when he stops and goes, no, here's my face. You know, it's like, there's so many things that we have to go like, that's not what my dad meant. And I know that. And that's not what I should be throwing at God. Cause that's how God is too. But the very fact that you stopped in the hallway, turned away and went, hey baby, whoa, like, I'm sorry, this is not right. That just saved her $100,000 in counseling and maybe a marriage or two, you know?
Yeah.
Really?
True.
It is. I just think that we as leaders and dads, and I'll wrap this up. I got a whole list of things here, like about healing. Let's do this again, okay? Part two. But it's like, I think that, I mean, you have nailed it, Adam, is like self-aware is not, just like, how did I come across? Is like, there's an inequity of balance between you and her, right? Between you and your wife, between you and your staff. There's an inequity. And you don't want to act like it's a big thing or a real thing because you're on the top.
Exactly.
Right? It's like, well, they shouldn't feel that. Says the boss. Says the dad who has all the cards, who has the credit card, who owns the house that I live in, who's going to pay for my college and my wedding. Well, of course you're going to say I shouldn't feel like that, but I do, right? And for us to be self, this is so good, man. For us to be aware that it's like this, it's humbling yourself down going, I have all the cards. And if I'm across the table from someone with all the cards, how would I feel? You know? And it's like, it's just like, man, this is worth the whole thing right here. I didn't know we were going to go this way.
No, what you said is so spot on too. Cause for me, again, just being totally honest, I'm an insecure leader. And so I downplay constantly the role I have, even on a Sunday. I never say lead pastor. I say one of the pastors. Because I feel that. I feel like I'm one of the pastors. So I'm constantly taking myself, and even in conversation, I'll say, like, I got nothing figured out. I mean, I say that on Sundays all the time. So I was like, I don't have any power. Like, yeah, you do. You're still the boss.
You're in the middle of the stage with $1 million of lights and cameras pointing at you. Nobody else is. So you're just wrong there. So I'll give you one last thing, and then we'll wrap this up. So when I was a youth pastor, right? Nobody called me Pastor Jim. I was just Jim. He's my youth pastor, but I move out here to Colorado and the culture is different. And now people call me Pastor Jim. I'm like, huh? Like people yell it in the airport at DIA. I'm like, hey, Pastor Jim. I'm like, ah, you know, I got really embarrassed. And I thought, like, I'm just Jim. Here's when it changed. When I turned 50, and I had to go have one of those prostate exams, okay?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Now, this will, right? I need Dr. Anderson, to stick his finger in my butt, okay? Not Brad. Now, they're the same person, okay? I don't want Brad to examine my prostate. I want Dr. Anderson to. So, you following me there?
I'm following, yeah.
There is some comfort in going, I need to hear from my pastor, right? Like I want my kids to call me dad, not Jim, because there's a relational thing there, right? You're my teacher. You're my authority. I'm an elder. I put myself under your authority. And so there's part of it is like, I think our heart sometimes is to self-deprecate down and go, I'm just one of the guys, right?
Yep.
And there's some merit in that. But there's some other things when everything look at you, you go like, hey, you're the general. We're the soldiers. Lead.
Yep.
And we're not going to vote this time. All right. So it's a real, real delicate balance. But as the leader, as the dad, as the boss, as the whatever that is, where you do have an inequity of power to the other people, you have nailed it. We have to call this thing the self-awareness of leadership, because they're aware of it, right? And when we act like it's not there, everybody pays. This has been so helpful to me.
Oh, geez.
I usually pay $200 an hour for this. So thank
this
you,
is Adam. Perfect. This is perfect.
Yeah. Hey, so I noticed there's a lot of similarities between what's happening up there and what's happened down here in Colorado. I would like to come back and revisit the reentry, the healing, you know, the walk in the halls of people that you know tried to take you down, right? And you know, and they know. And then it's like, I just got back in the Holy Land and I stood on the beach where Jesus asked Peter three times, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Because
yeah.
A couple weeks ago, you threw me under a bus, right? And it's because I got to be honest with you, that healing's still in progress for me. Okay.
Very much so.
All right. And
for me, I'm pointing at myself.
Yeah, I get it. I had to change a sermon because a few weeks ago, because you have to make decisions at a certain point going, am I going to hang on to this or move on? And I said, I'm going to move on. All right. And I wrote that in my sermon. I'm just going to move on. And like, you know, I'm waiting for, what am I waiting for them to do? Ask for forgive, apologize, say they were wrong. It's never going to happen. I need to move on. Okay. So I was great. I wrote that on a Tuesday. On Wednesday, I sat behind me in my office and somebody brought up one of the people that I was going to move on from. And I lost my crap. I mean, bad, like sinfully bad. Right. And I had to go back. And
I can't relate with that whatsoever. Nope. Insert yeah. sarcasm. Keep going.
Yeah. I had to go back and take it out of my sermon because I'm not going to stand up there and act like I'm a better person than I am. Healing and forgiveness are not an event. They are a process. I keep saying this is the last thing, but you know, of all the miracles that Jesus did, none of them, the only ones, how to say this? He healed blindness in an event. He healed paralysis in an event. He cast out a demon in an event. I can't find one miracle where he cured somebody of bitterness in an event, where he took away lust in an event, where he repaired a marriage or trust in an event. That was a long journey. And
that
I think that's
good.
I just think that I just want to come back and visit with you again about what's your journey been like. And I'll share some of mine and you share some of yours. But if we could just hold on to this self-awareness thing, not just as leaders of organizations, but leaders of kids, leaders of relationships, leaders of daughters, it's like there's so much at stake. So, all right. You got anything big? Yeah. Tell us about your social media. So if we want to follow you, how can we follow you? Because your head comes up on my stories all the time.
And I apologize. Feel free to block me.
No, it's a well shaved head too, right?
it is a well shaved head. No, yeah. Jim, thanks for being the real deal. I just need to say that because you're someone that I feel like I can let my guard down with because you do the exact same thing. As far as where to find me, I'm Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Instagram's probably where I'm at the most. Adam A. Weber. I got a podcast called The Conversation and just a huge fan of Jim Bergen.
All right. Hey, well, thanks. We're going to get together and do this again because let's get into part two of the reentry and healing. All right.
I look forward to it.
Okay. Thanks, Adam.